I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Every 5 minutes, someone dies while waiting for a compatible donor heart, liver, or kidney. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists strive to engineer an animal with human-compatible organs, thereby saving millions of lives. But these ancestors are not the docile herd animals they envision. Instead, the project spawns something big, something evil, something hungry. Ancestor by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, welcome to Beyond the Haunt. I'm Evelyn Kennedy.
And I am Jessica Powell.
And we're answering listener questions on all things spirit. Today our question is, what are spirit guides and how do I connect with them?
I like how you're just jumping right into it when we like missed a whole entire month.
Okay, well give them the rundown.
I like to dub the month of May as either Mavid or Covey.
I think neither of those are particularly snappy.
I think you're wrong. So anyway, we had COVID.
It definitely set us back a little bit in our work, recording, home life, everything.
It sucked.
It was terrible.
Yeah. You know, for those people who say it was like the cold, I would have loved a cold. A cold would have been great. And to be fully transparent, Ev and I are both fully vaxxed and boosted. And that stuff sucked ass.
Yeah.
Real bad. COVID brain. Like, we started to feel better, like, a little bit, maybe a week and a half ago. But my COVID brain was so bad, I felt like I was literally stoned out of my mind.
Yeah. I feel like it feels nice to finally be a little bit more on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty wretched. The whole breathing thing, the whole, like, tasting thing, all of it. It was a really weird disease. So for anybody else who has gotten it and has not had a mild case, our empathy is with you. For those of you who had a mild case and want to give a shit. Anyway, so yeah, now we can talk about spirit guides.
Okay, so people, this is probably, if I had to say like what's my two most frequently asked questions are like, how do I develop my intuition and how do I connect with my spirit guides? So first, let's talk a little bit about how we define spirit guides. So first, I want to say that depending on like cultural and religious history, this is not one size fits all kind of situation. You are going to see different definitions of what a spirit guide is and can be. So we're just here to talk about our experience in our teachings and in our beliefs, what that all kind of shakes out to. So I have kind of a theory that spirit guides are just like manifestations of different energetic archetypes. When we're talking about spirit guides, we can have, you know, deities, we can have animals, we can have departed loved ones, we can have planetary beings. Really, it can be anything. It can be your childhood favorite stuffed animal, if that resonates.
Or even something that you don't even know the name of before, and there's like some sort of ascended master that has like come to you.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to be, I think it makes people feel. It
doesn't have to be a name brand.
Yeah. One thing that I will say that I've noticed is that sometimes people get really excited when they're like, oh my gosh, like Isis is working with me. Like they feel kind of like celebrity status, and like not to burst your bubble. It's just sort of part of it. Like you have your own divinity and like we're all kind of working together to find this spiritual balance, and anyone can come to anyone and you can talk to anyone that you want to talk to for the most part.
And they can come to you and you don't need to work with them right now, which yeah. I'll talk about because I had somebody come knocking on my door while I was in Vipassana in April.
And no name brand spiritual guides are not less than the guides that you may have heard of more prominently. So also don't think that if you are able to connect and it's like not some like main well-known figure that there's something wrong with that. There's just a lot that we don't know and that exists in the spirit realm, that there's options, many options. So I tend to think that these are like archetypes that are represented through whatever lens feels right to us. So that to me is why I see a lot of, you know, like probably the one of the most well-known spirit guides would be Jesus Christ. And there's a lot of like that Messiah archetype that has a lot of those stories that go along with it throughout many religions. But I see working with people with not even like strongly Christian backgrounds, but like people who were raised in predominantly Christian societies will still see that archetypal energy come through as Jesus Christ, because that is like how they can swallow it. That's how it makes the most sense. That resonates the most. I don't know. What do you think about that? Do you think that there's like that, like each being is their own being, or do you think that there's like a overarching archetype?
I mean, well, and like, because most of my, like most of my guides that I work with are predominantly religious deities. The way, and Reza Eslan, who is a theologian scholar, has broken it down like this too, because I don't think you can talk about spirituality and spirit guides without like mentioning religion. Just so you guys all know, I'm not religiously oriented in any way, shape, or form, spiritually very deeply rooted, but there are definite deities that have resonated with me. And what Reza says is that all religions, basically, when you bring them, like break them down to their core, are the exact same. The stories and the figures that go along with those religions are all the mythology that just resonate with you the most. And so with that, like if you're, you know, one of my biggest guides who I've worked with for over a decade now is Kali, who is deeply rooted in the Hindu religion. She's the goddess of time and change. And within Hindu religion, there's so many different gods and goddesses because each one has its own component that it like focuses on. Like Ganesh is the remover of obstacles. Kali is time and change and destruction. There's so many things. So like within that particular religion, there are individual deities that do focus on an archetype. Whereas within like Western culture, when you are talking about Christianity, Jesus is like the all and everything.
But also we have what's interesting to me though is that even within that, where it's like, oh, we have like this one God, but we also have the Holy Trinity. We have a lot of like Mother Mary worship and still, you know, like in Catholicism. True. And so I think that some of those archetypes, like I think Mother Mary energy, when I interact with that particular frequency, feels very similar to like Guan Yin. Yeah, I think that you're right. I think that it's just like what resonates most, I guess. Yeah. That's the verbiage that I would use.
Well, and the thing is too, like what I've experienced, especially with working with Kali for so long through so much of my healing, all the shit that she's literally put me through and that we've kind of come out of together, she's even shifted to be more motherly. And to be totally transparent, I have a huge resistance to everything Christian because I am a gay woman in the United States of America. So I have a block, and we'll talk about our beloved Jesus, because he did come to me in Vipassana and I am not ready to work with him. And he was like, you need a queer type. And this is probably going to offend some people, whatever. He is a very queer oriented deity. Like if you look at that man, he's probably genderless. He is probably asexual, if anything. And just because of all of the bullshit that I have had to deal with being a gay woman in America, I am not ready to work with anybody who is Christian oriented, which is why I was really happy that Kali did come into this like motherly aspect, because some of my healers that I work with were like, oh, you should work with Mother Mary. I'm like, no, I'm not, this is not somebody I'm ready to work with. And that's fine. Like, that's a fine thing to do. And we'll talk about too, like when you're integrating new deities in, or if somebody comes knocking at your door, ways to make sure, because I've worked with clients who open themselves up to everything, including all the bad shit. And there was no boundaries. Like, even with your guides that you work with, there needs to be boundaries in order to protect yourself, because you can leave yourself susceptible to other entities and other energies.
I was thinking when you were talking too about like guides that can take on that mother energy archetype, and how there's definitely, I think again, it's like, what do you need in any moment, or what resonates more with you? And if you need like basically the hard mother or the soft mother archetype, and you like to work with hard mother archetypes more, you like more, like you like Kali, you like ayahuasca, they're more like fearsome, like lioness energy.
Yeah.
Which usually if I'm working with like a hard mother energy, that's, I work with lioness energy as my default. It's interesting to look at that compared with like those archetypes that do fall into it. And again, that's where I'm like, oh, there's kind of like an overlap between just some of those ways that they present themselves.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was mentioning too, though, is like the way that Kali has manifested and shifted is that she has actually been the soft mother. Yeah. She's obviously been more of the fierce mother with, you know, she's a very ferocious being, but she has, for me, and this might not be for anybody else, like we've had a very long relationship together. And I'll even talk about too, like how she came into my life, because I didn't even really know, I knew of her, I didn't know a whole lot about her. And I will say too, because when I am working with deities that are based in other cultures, religious and spiritual practices, I do think it is, as a woman in America who is white, it is, I will have the relationship that I have with that particular deity, but it's also very important that I know the mythology and I know the history and I know how that deity interacts within the culture in which she is most revered and worshipped.
Mm, yeah, that's a great point. I think sometimes too, if you are a non-religious person, if you are someone who is non-religious and specifically like religion resistant, I love working with like non-personified guides that aren't based as much in religion. So animal guides are super great for that. Departed loved ones that you have can be really great for that as well. Animal guides, I think, are really cool to work with. I've noticed that sometimes people have either you have a way easier time connecting with an animal guide or a way harder time. And I think it has to do with your ability to like linguistically interpret, because a lot of times when I'm connecting with animal guides, there's a lot more like animal style communication. So we're seeing like body language and action and sound, but not always language. And sometimes you can, when you're in a connection with an animal spirit guide, you can still ask for them to utilize language. Now that we've covered kind of like the who and the what are your tips for how to actually like connect with and build connection with spirit guide?
When I was in my, I call it my woo school, we actually did like guided meditations where we opened ourselves up. And once you, there's this place that you get in your, if for anybody who's meditated, you can feel the difference between like your thinking brain, like your frontal cortex. Like you'll actually like feel, if you have 11s, I have 11s because I'm always grimacing or squinting because I can't see because I don't wear my glasses ever. And you can like, you can feel that part of your brain working. But when you get into a place, and I want to be clear, meditating is both being in that place and in this other space that I'm going to talk about. Like you don't succeed ever in meditation in any way, shape or form. It's just, it is what it is. But if you can feel yourself kind of sink back a little bit further, it's like right behind your eyes. And what we do is we call that, and I've mentioned before too, we all have different vocabularies within this realm of work, but we call it our center of neutrality, the center of our head. It's basically where your third eye is. That's where I get all of my data downloads when I'm doing readings. That's where I get my visualizations. That's where I get basically everything. If I'm operating from the front of my brain, that is where I'm actually like thinking and analyzing. That's like my consultant program manager brain. And then back further is where I get into that deeper space. So when you're in that space is when you're going to be most receptive to be able to see who your guides are. And when I first started like actually working consciously, because I didn't even realize Kali was a guide, I just knew that like I had a thing with her. And I can talk about how that is too, because that came about way differently. But I had like this bear guide, and her name was Betty, and she was really sweet, and she worked with me through this various part of my life. And when I got this guide, I know my teacher told me there's like four or five things that you need to like set with them, and I forgot basically all of them except for the two that I find most helpful, which is, one, you need to make an agreement with them that they are serving your highest good, and that if you ever want them to go away, they have to. So if you're like, I don't want you knocking on my door right now, I need you to like not be as present, they have to respect that. And if they don't respect that, that is an indicator that it could be somebody who is not actually there for you, but for their own devious shit.
The other thing that I just want to jump in about that is, we were taught also to make sure that like you do get a name or a title that you can call them. I feel like there are definitely like trickster energetics, but even those still have rules that they kind of have to follow. It's very like Rumpelstiltskin. But having someone's name, and then like also assessing how you feel when you get that and the level of authenticity of it is really important. So know who you're working with so that you are not putting yourself at risk of being energetically manipulated.
Yeah. Although I have that guy, my healing guide is okay. One who I don't know. It is a feminine energy. I don't know her name. I don't know who she is. And she is under this veil of secrecy, both for my own protection and hers. But the other thing that I do when I get a new guide is I vet them with my current guides. So my main guides that I work with now, and I have it like rotates. I work with an eagle guide, I work with Kali, I work with Isis, and I work with ayahuasca. And whenever somebody is coming, and what I have learned too with communing with them is that the three specifically, Kali, Isis, and ayahuasca, are actually the protectors of this other guide and me. So like they have been gifted to me because of this other guide. But if I have somebody come in, Kali is my main girl. So I'll just look at her and be like, is this spirit legit? And then she'll give the either yes or no. And because I have such a long running trusting relationship with her, that's another way that I vet as well.
Yeah. I love your point too, that making sure that they are working in your highest and best good, because we have to remember that these entities are their own beings and that they can absolutely have purposes that are beyond us. So I think sometimes when people get really excited about having like a celebrity type guide, sometimes that comes from like an ego place, and that ego place can be like, oh, well, I was chosen by this guide. And you can really get yourself into a lot of trouble with that, because you are putting yourself in a subservient position and putting them really on a pedestal that means that you can take advice that isn't right for you. You can allow guidance that is actually serving, for example, you know, like Isis's highest and best good. And maybe that's something that you want to do. Maybe it aligns with your personal goals, values, beliefs, and it's something that you want to choose. But you also need to know that you do not ever have to do anything that a guide tells you. Guidance is not law, it is guidance. And oftentimes I won't even refer to them as guides. I'll refer to them as allies or like non-physical friends, because that's really more how I want people to think of them. I don't want them to think of them as these like, you know, high level beings that are unattainable to you, and more so like collaborators in spirit. And I have seen people be put into positions where they become sort of more manipulated. And so I have seen people be kind of taken advantage of by guides who have a lot of preference towards like being worshipped, who actually prefer that hierarchical sort of place. And I don't even want to say that there's anything like wrong with that. It's just that like some energies are like used to that.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
And kind of prefer it. And if you put yourself in a situation to show up to them that way, they can like it. So just know that you can or you cannot interact with them that way. It really should feel like a partnership.
Yeah. Well, that's a question you can even ask them too, is like, I am willing to work with you. Are you willing to be collaborative? So I know I was taught these various questions, and I'm actually kind of opposed to like any sort of like strict rules or things about how to work within the spirit world. So I think what's really important is for you to kind of figure out what you are hoping to get from your work with a guide and what's most important to you with regards to the boundaries that you keep and find your own questions that you want to ask to vet them. And then whatever's going to be most important to you at that time in your life. And those questions will probably change as your life progresses and as your healing work progresses and whatever happens to you in your life changes and shifts. So think about the questions that are like most pertinent to you and what you really like, what you want that relationship to look like.
Yeah. And some people, one other question that I get around this a lot is like, how many spirit guides do people have? I will say I have seen people have one. I have seen people have a dozen. I've actually seen a couple people have none that were like predetermined and they can just sort of like call them in as needed. So there's not really like, again, there's not a one size fits all solution there. I usually see, if you think of it as like kind of like a company, like a management team, I've seen oftentimes that there will be one guide that sort of governs like one aspect, like something that they are an expert in or that they are an expert at holding for you. And so that might be like a guide that governs your parenting, a guide that governs your romantic connections, a guide that governs your work. And those guides will work together. They will work individually. Sometimes you'll have guides that don't like each other, and there will be like debates amongst them of how you should be guided in one situation. So for example, if you had like a career-based guide that was like, this is what's best for your career, my goal is to always guide your highest and best good for your career, and your family guide is like, we need to have a talk about work-life balance. So you do have to be mindful that like, just because a guide says something doesn't mean that it is going to fit into every aspect of your life. You are still the decision maker. We are not turning over power to a spiritual guidance team.
Yes, I think that's very important. Because one thing you want to check, like just check yourself on too, is there are people that we have worked with and will probably work with again in the future of this type, is like, there's some people that don't want to make their own decisions and they want to like outsource all of that to their guides. And that also allows people to blame their guides for things that go wrong. But ultimately when it comes into your life, and I don't know if free will actually exists or not. I think that's up for debate. But when it comes, I do believe in the illusion of free will because we do make decisions. Know that you are making all of the decisions. So even if somebody is telling you to do something and you don't want to do it, but you do it, you are choosing to do that.
Yeah. It's really important to have ownership over your actions. It's okay to be informed and use that information and the process of gathering information from your guides to make those decisions. But we definitely don't want you utilizing your guides as a crutch for your own not wanting to sort of pave your own path.
Yeah.
Okay, we have 5 minutes left to tell you how to actually connect with your guides. Let's get kicking on that. Guided meditations, like Jess was mentioning, can be a really great way. Obviously, it's just scheduling a reading. If that's like way beyond your real wheelhouse, you can do a reading with a intuitive and have them like be like, hey, this is who's showing up for you today. That won't necessarily get you like a complete and comprehensive list, but it will usually bring forward a guide that's relevant, most relevant to whatever you're working on at the moment. I do have a guided meditation on my website as well for meeting your spirit guides. So if that's something that you want to undertake on your own, you can do that. And that is at themirrorgrid.com. In terms of connecting and like interpreting the information as it comes through, first you have to realize that your spirit guides are already communicating with you. They are guiding to the best of their ability. So just because you are maybe not conscious of it does not mean that they are not putting things in your pathway. So the sort of the idea of like, oh, I have to connect with them, I have to talk to them, like that is lovely and that is another tool in your tool belt. But you also can trust that like, they are doing their best to show you what they need to show you. So lining things up such that you will get the point. It is more convenient, I think, to talk to your guide and get the information quicker. But just know that you're not disconnected from your guides if you're not talking to them. They are managing what needs to be managed.
Yeah.
Automatic writing is a really good way to connect with guides, especially certain kinds of guides that will flow really well with. Like I said, like different kinds of guides seem to have different ways that they like to communicate. So a guide that was like a linguist in their incarnated life is probably going to want to talk. You know, animals might be more visual or sensational. Like we talked about, some guides are going to want to connect in a like a more worship driven kind of way, or even in a certain like sacred kind of space or sacred container. Plant medicine guides obviously like are facilitated and carried by plant medicine, but that doesn't mean that you can't connect with them outside of that. It just means that that is a clear pathway for them.
Yeah. Like I don't ever have to actually ingest ayahuasca again to work with ayahuasca. In fact, she's even told me that every time I try to ingest her now, the experience is going to be the same, to actually have me not like use that as a crutch. Another thing I want to mention too, is that if you're like finding yourself weirdly fascinated by some entity, deity, something like that, pay attention to that. Cause like Kali came to me, I was sitting in a satsang in Rishikesh, and they always like sang chants and stuff like this. And this one particular chant, which we had never sung before, in the middle of it, I just start sobbing quietly as I possibly can. You know, I don't sob quietly. But I just start absolutely crying. And I look at the actual words, and there were three goddesses that were listed there. It was like Saraswati and somebody else and Kali. And I just looked at Kali's name and the tears just flowed from my eyeballs. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And that's when that was like the introduction to Kali. But then like Evelyn said, I didn't actually talk to her until a couple years later, not even a couple years. It was a couple months afterwards. I ended up getting jumped in India. And when I worked with one of my friends who was a healer to just kind of like talk to the higher beings about that experience, she's the one that came to the table and mentioned that that was something that she did in order to start the ball rolling with everything else that I was about to do. And it's on brand. I mean, yeah, it is Kali. And so that's when I started working with her. But that incident was something that she placed into my path. And she was like, it was at the right time. The taxis were still running. It was one man. He wasn't armed. It was like a terrifying experience that would make you go into doing all of this other therapeutic work that would open up all this other stuff. But you were always safe and protected through it, even though it was an absolutely terrifying experience.
That brings up a really important point, too, that like highest and best good does not mean most comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
So your guides are not abusing you if you are being put in hard or uncomfortable or even like dangerous situations. They're serving like big picture, highest and best good. So just know that discomfort is often always going to be part of your growth process in this life. And so don't necessarily be turned off, I guess, by the fact that sometimes you do have to learn things the hard way.
Thing I did bring up is a very traumatic experience. And everybody has their own way of dealing with that as well. So if I really do like taking whatever experiences I have and figuring out where the learning is from that. And I know that not everybody is into that. And there's no judgment of that either. That's just the way that I am equipped with that.
I feel like both things are true, too. Sort of the idea that like everything happens for a reason. And also some things are terrible and random. Like I don't actually think that those things I think sometimes it's one and sometimes it's the other.
They both exist.
When really bad things happen, I don't think that we need to necessarily like spiritual bypass with like everything happens for a reason, because sometimes, you know, this is where I do believe that free will exists, because I believe that we can mess things up. I think we can mess things up on our timelines. I think that we can commit harms that we're not supposed to. And then that ultimately like the universe is trying to balance itself out as we go. I think that it can feel really good for a lot of people to contextualize traumas through what they can do next. Like, what can I do with this? How can I make it so that this wasn't only something that set me back? Like, how can I move forward? And I think it's just a difference in interpretation between is that assigning a meaning or a purpose to my pain? And like, is that me? It, like, you know, I guess I think that that can be purposeful if it puts you on a path towards moving forward. And for some people, it won't. Yeah. And so if it doesn't, like, you need to do what you need to do to move on to the next path. And so sometimes viewing something as like, this was a terrible and random thing that happened that wasn't deserved, and I need to leave it as that and move on with my life from there. Yeah. So whatever gets you forward, man. Yeah.
Just know your guys won't always be like mine and traumatize you.
Yeah, yeah. And
the truth was, I was already traumatized. I just didn't know how traumatized I was.
It was more putting a magnifying glass on your trauma.
So that I could actually pay attention to it. Yeah, I mean, that's... But yeah, your highest good, I think, ultimately is what we're trying to... I did want to bring out those caveats, though, because that was... was a very awful experience, and
it was a hard pathway to high
school. Oh, it was a very, very hard pathway. But I'm honestly thankful for it, which is so strange to say. There were other key learnings in
that. Well, and that's one of those things that, like, some people would look back at that after 50 years and be like, "That I could never say that I was thankful for that."
Yeah.
And that's okay too. Like, it's okay to look back at it and say, "Hey, I'm grateful that this sent me on this path." And it's okay to look at it and say, "I can't ever say that.
That fucking sucked. I wish it never happened.
Yeah.
Why do I have a hole in my leg?"
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate this hole in my leg.
Yeah. Makes you look tough.
Or something.
At least it's not on your face.
Yeah. It's not on my face.
Gratitude,
it's just on my
practice.
It's just on my shin. I know. I have Evelyn poke it every now and then. Freaks her out. It's healed. It's a healed hole. But yeah. But like the, like we were saying, the highest good is not going to be comfortable. Well, that's another thing too, is like you're like... And there was somebody on like Glennon's podcast who was talking about how she hates how people say, "Oh, I wouldn't be the person I am today if all of this stuff didn't happen." But like in growth mindset work, if you're in this place of comfort and I don't want to say complacency, but like if you're in a really comfortable place, oftentimes people aren't like, where can I make improvements? It's more just kind of coasting on where you're at, and where people tend to make the most changes in their life and where people grow the most is through adversity and is through challenge and discomfort and sometimes awfulness. And that's where like these nuggets of shifts and growth actually happen. I don't know a single person in my life. I was actually thinking about this while we were preparing for this for some reason, because I didn't think I was going to bring it up. But I can't think of a single person who has made astronomical shifts and changes in their lives when things were going really well.
Yeah. I mean, I would have been, when I look back at like my key turning points in my spiritual life, but in my, you know, sort of like tangible life as well, they all stem from a bump in the road. And, you know, some of them are bigger bumps than others, but you have to have those moments that make you think. You have to have the invitations come up.
Yeah. To question things.
Yeah. Yeah. And while I don't think that that necessarily means we have to like tolerate or suffer horrific abuse.
No.
It is like when things come up, you have a choice of what to do with it at that point, because we can't go back. We can't take it back. We can't fix it. You know, our linear timeline that we as humans are operating on, it goes one way right now. So like you can choose to,
unless you do a lot of drugs,
unless you do a lot of drugs. And that's been this episode of Beyond the Haunt. Okay, you guys, if you want to send us questions, if you have anything that's been, you know, just kind of the bug in your ear, please send us your questions. You can email me directly at k.evelynkennedy, or you can fill out a submission form on my website, themirrorgrid.com.
We're going to make a Gmail. We talked about this before I went even into Vipassana.
Yeah.
We need to have a Beyond the Haunt email address.
Don't worry. We probably will at some point. But right now, we don't.
Yeah. Anyway, you guys trust us with your questions. God bless you.
So reach out. If you have any questions, let me know. You know, we want to know about your spirit guides and what your connections are like.
Yeah.
So until next time, you guys.
And I can be found at... Thank you very much. Miss Plug all over the place.
You got it. Look, I can't carry the team on the plugs.
I know. Plus, I'm kind of stepping away from this work anyway. So, but maybe not.
Don't Who knows, actor?
Yeah. Don't contact me. No, but you can find me at jpowintuitive.com. Yeah, that's how websites work, right? All right. Anyway, we love all you guys.
Talk to you next time.
Peace.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.